the topic of this shiur, and hopefully this is the beginning of a series of shiurim, is simcha. Simcha means happiness, simcha means joy, and with Hashem's help we're going to learn a lot of other things that simcha means. And the shiurim are going to be based on the teachings of Rabbeinu Zal, Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov, and of course his main student, Rabbi Nosson Zal. And I'll try as much as possible to give the sources as we go along, so that if anybody would want to look into it, to see the things in the source and get more clarity on it, in addition, we'll try to keep that as clear as possible. When we mention Rabbi Nachman, we use the term Rabbeinu Zal, our rabbi. Rabbeinu Zal makes a statement in Sichoi Saran, Rabbi Nachman's wisdom, paragraph Chav 20, that in order for a person to be zeiche, to simcha, is more difficult than everything else in Yiddishkeit. That's about as serious as you can get. For somebody to tell us up front that this isn't easy, it isn't simple, it's extremely difficult, but we'll see also, obviously, extremely worthwhile. And Rabbi Nachman continues that it appears, and this statement he made in the early 1800s, or towards the end of the 1700s, that for a person to be zeiche, to simcha, is the most difficult of all items in Avodas Hashem, in serving Hashem. And Rabbi Nachman said, it appears that in order for a person to achieve simcha, and here we're talking about consistently, to be steady in all situations, under all circumstances, it's impossible for a person to be able to do it without resorting to inyoni shtus, without resorting to the term fun, things that are not necessarily intellectual, whereby a person at times has to act silly, funny, in a way that there are people that would not respect. And to do items of tzchoik and shtus, and only by doing that will the person be able to be happy. Now this obviously doesn't mean all the time. There are times when a person is in a good frame of mind, what we refer to as moichen de gadlus, when a person enjoys learning Torah, when a person enjoys davening, when a person enjoys raising money for tzedakah. But in order for a person to be able to be in simcha always, including the times when a person doesn't have moichen de gadlus, when a person isn't feeling high and happy and fulfilled, and when a person is experiencing, whether it be physical problems, mental problems, social problems, all kinds of things, in order for the person to still always be able to be happy, Rabbi Nachman said, the person is going to have to resort to mili d'shtusa, to things that could be considered silly, foolish by some people, in order to be able to maintain the simcha. And obviously, he's telling us that this is the right thing to do. This is very worthwhile and extremely important. In the same sefer, Sichas Aran, Rabbi Nachman's wisdom, paragraph Chav, Rabbi Nachman makes a statement that when a Jew is zeiche to be in simcha, to be happy, Hashem himself protects that person. That gives a person a special shmirah, a special protection from Hashem, and Hashem will especially save that person from committing pegam abris. Pegam abris means sins related to the relationship between men and women, and this refers to whether it be sins mentally, in thinking bad thoughts, illicit type of thoughts, or committing sinful actions, actual actions, that this item, a person maintaining simcha, maintaining happy frame of mind. Happiness, and again, the happiness means both externally and internally. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, Nosato Simcha Belibi. Obviously, the most important place for a person to have happiness is in their heart, inside. One of the things that we're going to discuss as we get more into the topic is the issue of external and internal and how they affect each other. How at times, in order for a person to be able to bring simcha into the heart, when it's not there yet, a person has to do external actions. Person has to clap their hands. Person has to dance. Person has to jump. Person has to run. Person has to do somersaults, cartwheels, in order to wake up their heart, in order to be ma'ira, the lay, the moyach, the heart and the mind, in order to bring the simcha, the joy into there, which is the most important part, which is the real center. Sometimes the external will lead to the internal, and sometimes the internal will display itself through the external organs. Sometimes a person experiences a real, honest, sincere happiness in their heart and in their mind that brings them to want to clap, to want to jump for joy, that kind of feeling. Rabbi Nathan discusses two items which are sort of opposites. One represents one of the worst sins and the greatest destruction possible in Yiddishkeit, whereas the other one represents one of the most precious, special feelings that a person can possibly have in Yiddishkeit. The first one that we mentioned, the worst destruction and sin, is atzlus, depression, sadness, which causes all kinds of damage, especially pigam abris and all kinds of other sins. It's a natural, like lighter fluid to take a person on a one-way trip downwards, spiritually, and many times in other ways also. Whereas the opposite of that, one of the opposites of atzlus is called Lev Nishbor. Lev Nishbor means when a person is feeling brokenhearted, not brokenhearted in a sense of giving up hope. Atzlus is something that expresses itself in anger, bad feelings, a negativity that leads to bad things. Person harming themselves, harming people around them, etc. Whereas Lev Nishbor is a person realizing their own weakness, their own smallness, but not in a manner that leads them to give up or to be angered by it. On the contrary, it leads them to seek help from Hashem. Lev Nishbor is what leads a person to cry out to Hashem, or to search for a tzaddik, or to speak to their close friends, to pour out their heart to their close, to somebody that they feel close enough to open up to. And even though Lev Nishbor is such a positive thing, Rabbeinu Zal warned his students and insisted that they limit it to a maximum of an hour a day. Because he said that for people like you, meaning like his students, for regular Jews, it's very easy to confuse Lev Nishbor and Atzlus. And it's very easy for a person to chas v'shalom slide from Lev Nishbor into Atzlus. Therefore, he said, a person, even though this item of Lev Nishbor is something which the Torah says, Elokim lo yisivze, Hashem will never refuse or reject a person who presents himself before Hashem with a Lev Nishbor, with a broken heart, with humbleness, a person feeling small, that's something that Hashem respects and loves tremendously. Still, Rabbi Nazar said to limit it to 1 hour a day and the rest of the day to work only on being besimcha, only on simcha, happiness. Even a person who is honestly feeling far from Hashem, a person who looks at themselves and examines themselves, and the person comes up with a long, long list of deficiencies and defectiveness in machshava, in thought, in dibur, in speech, in maisa, in action, in every part of their body and soul, they see stains, they see bad things. Still, Rabbeinu Zal taught us that a Jew, the worst Jew, it should be enough for that person, just the thought that I could have been a non-Jew, chas v'shalom, I could have been created a non-Jew, the fact that technically I'm a Jew, that is something to celebrate. That's something to be very, very happy about. And if I have to, that has to be enough. That has to be a rope at times to be able to pull myself out of any negativity, any depression, sadness, feelings of rejection, feeling distant from Hashem. The Shaloy Asani Goy is a positive thought which a person has to use at times to start themselves in Simcha. In Sicha Saran, again, Rabbi Nachman's wisdom, paragraph 43, Rabbi Nazal says there that one of the incredible accomplishments that a person can accomplish when they're happy is that they can actually give life to another person, to another Jew. And Rabbeinu Zal there explains that there are people who are going through tremendous suffering. He uses the term Yisurim Gedoilim V'Noiroim Rachmanu Litzlan. Great, awesome suffering. And these people have no one to speak to, no one that they can open up to, that they can pour out their hearts to. And we know that the Torah tells us that when a person is going through problems, difficulties, suffering, a major, major solution to the problems is simply having the ability to talk it out, verbally especially, and sometimes even in writing. I had this chus today. A friend of mine shared an email with me that somebody sent him from across the world, from Canada. A person, a friend of his, who is going through tremendous, tremendous difficulties, lo aleinu, a person who's divorced, wife ended up marrying a non-Jew, causing all kinds of difficulties and problems in him being able to see his children, doesn't have a job at the present moment, physical problems, a tremendous list. And the person, this email went on for a full page, and the bottom paragraph of the page began by saying, and I want to thank you tremendously for being there, for me having someone to write this to. I feel a sense, as I've gotten to the bottom of this page, typing in just two-thirds of the page, I already feel major relief. And this, to me personally, was an eye-opener. In other words, I somehow didn't click until I saw that sometimes it's not, you know, today it's not even just in speaking. The Pasuk says, Daiga b'levi shisachana, that if a person has worries and problems on their heart and their mind, talk it out. Talk it out if you have someone that you really trust and that you know really genuinely cares about you, like Hashem, like a tzaddik, like a real good friend, talk it out and that'll help you tremendously. But to say that not even talking, if a person has such a friend that they could write to, that the person will see clearly that just writing it, expressing it in writing already alleviates a major, major part of the mountain that the person's carrying. The fact that they were able to share their burden, their mountain, with somebody else, that already alleviates minimum two-thirds of the pain and the suffering. So here Rabbeinu Zal says there are people going through tremendous problems and suffering, and they can't tell it to anybody. They would wish they could, and yet they can't find the right person to say it to. And Rabbeinu Zal says, when a person comes along, when a Jew comes along, and the person has a smile on their face, just a smile, the person looks happy, that person can literally inject life into the other person who has the problems. And Rabbi Nazar says, now to say what kind of reward a person gets for that, for giving life to another Jew in that kind of situation, we know the Gemara says in Tainus, Daf Chof Beis, the Gemara there talks about one of the rabbis who met Eliyahu HaNavi, the prophet Eliyahu HaNavi, and he asked him, could you show me, he was walking in the marketplace, and he said, show me who are the best people in the entire marketplace here. Who are the ones who are going to receive Gan Eden, Olam Haba, paradise? And the Gemara points out three stories, three individual cases that Eliyahu HaNavi pointed out. The third one, the grand finale, was where Eliyahu HaNavi showed this rabbi a team of two people who were not rabbis, not tzaddikim, not necessarily gigantic philanthropists. They were two people who knew, who were able to see when a Jew was feeling down, when a person wasn't happy, when they were upset, when there was a conflict between two people, and they had the ability, by using their sense of humor, by putting on a smile, by being able to crack a joke, by being able to say something good, something positive about the other person, about the weather, about whatever it is, they were able to say the right words. And the Gemara calls them Hani Trei Batchi, these two jokers. People, that's what they were, jokers. And Eliyahu HaNavi pointed out that these two are among the elite that are going to be zechut to the highest levels of Gan Eden, because of the fact that with that, with a smile, a person who has the ability to find what to be happy about, they can actually do a tchias hameisim. They can bring a dead person back to life. We know that Rabbi Nazar himself, Rabbi Nachman, when he was asked once about miracles, we know that many people, when they hear about a tzaddik, they're always interested in hearing, could you tell me about a miracle that he performed? Rabbi Nazar considered the ultimate miracle being to be able to take a living person, a physically living person, who's mentally dead, spiritually dead, unhappy, depressed, take such a person and give them life, give them joy, give them inspiration, motivation to start living. That's the highest miracle in the world. That's the greatest chus in the world. At this point, I'd like to jump into a part in Likutei Halachos, the book Likutei Halachos, which was written by Rabbi Nachman's main student, Rav Nosson Zal, using the Hasidic teachings of his rabbi to understand and to shed light and to put a Hasidic flavor into the entire Shulchan Aruch, into the entire code of Jewish laws. In a chapter that deals with Nefilah Sapayim, speaking about one of the acts that a person does in the Tefillah Shachris after Shmon Esrei. In that chapter, Rav Nosson Zal goes off on a tangent based, obviously it's connected to the topic, but he goes off on a tangent at one point explaining the holiday of Purim and explaining the concept of Simcha with tremendous clarity. And I'd like to go into that, start that. We'll see if we finish it in this particular shiur, or we'll continue. Rav Nosson Zal there begins by saying that when we talk about a person doing a mitzvah or committing a sin, we know mitzvahs and sins are opposites. A sin generates depression, worry. It's a pasuk. There's a pasuk in Yeshayahu Navi where the pasuk says, in Tehillim, the pasuk says, Edag mechatosi, I worry from my sin. The term daiga means worry, sadness, depression, all of those words, all similar words to that, are all under that umbrella term daiga. And the pasuk says, Edag mechatosi, that sins cause worry, depression, sadness, etc. Which automatically tells us that mitzvah generates happiness. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, Pikudei Hashem Yeshorim Mesamchei Lev. The commandments of Hashem are straight. They bring joy to a person's heart. And Rav Nosson Zal tells us that the greatest harm and damage that's done by a sin is the sadness that it causes, the depression that it causes. That's the worst part, the worst aspect of a sin. Because when we speak about the spirit of Hashem, the Shekhinah, the term Shekhinah is a term used in the Gemara, in throughout Yiddishkeit, to refer to the spirit of Hashem, the holiness of Hashem, the goodness of Hashem, is called Shekhinah. Rav Nosson Zal says that the Shekhinah is Simchoson Shel Yisrael. The Shekhinah is the happiness of Klal Yisrael, the happiness of the Jewish people. We find, the Arizal says, that there's a pasuk in Tehillim where it says, Oyer Zeru Ala Tzadik, there's a light that shines for the Tzadik, Ule Yishrei Lev Simcha, and those who have a smooth heart are Zeuche to happiness. The Arizal says that those two words, Lev Simcha, a happy heart, have the exact numerical value of the word Shekhinah, the spirit of Hashem. These two are identical. When a Jew is happy, when he has happiness in his heart, the Shekhinah is with him, the spirit of Hashem is with him. He's feeding the Shekhinah. That's the battery, that's the life of the Shekhinah. When a Jew is sad, unhappy, when a person's committing sins, they're bringing the Shekhinah down. They're subtracting from this joy, this Simchasim Shel Yisroel. Now, a person would say, okay, there are places that we could go to where if we mention Simcha, they're not going to say that that's not part of Judaism. They'll acknowledge it's part of Yiddishkeit, but it's close to the bottom. There's a lot of things that are much more important. There's Torah, and there's Tzitzis, and there's Kilayim, and there's Shor Shenovach HaSapora, there's Simcha is somewhere, obviously, way in the back. Rav Nosson Zal says, there's a pasuk in Yeshaya HaNavi, chapter 35, where the pasuk says, V'simchas oilom al roshom. That Simcha, the place of Simcha, is on top of the head. Simcha is called, in Sifrei Kabbalah, the keser, the crown. It's the highest possible level of Kiddusha, of holiness, of spirituality, the top, uncontested. The Arizal tells us that when Klal Yisrael, when the Jewish people go into exile, it's a concept of falling. We're exiled from our land, the Eretz Yisrael, the land of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara describes it as a place that has all 10 levels of holiness in it. The Eser Kiddushas, the 10 levels of holiness in the world, are all based in Eretz Yisrael. when the Jewish people are evicted from Eretz Yisrael, it means they're disconnecting themselves from all 10 levels of holiness. That's called Golus. That's the definition of Golus, exile. The opposite of Golus is Geula. Geula means redemption. Geula means when all the exiles will be gathered back in, kibbutz Golias, when all the Jews who are found throughout the exile in the furthest places are going to be gathered up together and returned to the center of holiness, to the land of Eretz Yisrael. The Arizal says that the word Goal, the Hebrew word, we know that one of the codes that's used in the Torah is called Atbash, whereby the letters of a word are exchanged, the letters as they appear in the Hebrew alphabet are exchanged with the letter on the opposite end of the alphabet. For example, the Aleph, which is the first letter of the alphabet, is exchanged for a Tuf, the last letter of the alphabet. And a Tuf would be exchanged for an Aleph, replaced by an Aleph. A Beis, the second letter from the beginning, would be exchanged or replaced by a Shin, the second letter from the end. The Arizal says that the word Goal, the Hebrew word Goal, which means redemption, in Atbash spells the word Keser, referring to the crown of Hashem, implying that when the Jews are exiled, when the Jews leave all 10 levels of holiness, when they leave Eretz Yisrael, which is the center of all 10 levels of holiness, and we want to reverse that, we want to turn that around, we want to bring about a geula, a redemption, you need the highest possible light, the most powerful energy, spiritual energy, which is the keser, which is referred to as the crown, which is the top, which is simcha, as we said. The simchas olam al roshem. The simcha of the world is on their heads. On their heads is a crown. And this is why the pasuk says again in Yeshaya chapter 55, ki besimcha teitzeyu. They will leave. The Jews will leave. Leave what? Leave their exile. Exile means on a global level, and exile could mean a person's personal exile. The Baal Shem Tov once said that we say in Lechadevi on Friday night, we say Korvo el Nafshi Geola. Klal Yisrael, Jews generally, when they think about redemption, they think about thousands of people who are all gathering together and the whole crowd moving. The Baal Shem Tov said that there's a concept of a personal geula. There's a concept of a person who's in Eretz Yisrael, who's in shul with people, and it's Shabbos, the holiest time, the holiest place, and he's surrounded by a few hundred people, and he's not happy. He's not feeling, he's not connecting, he's not feeling the simcha. He's got things weighing him down on his mind and his heart. And the Baal Shem Tov said that this is why we say Korvo el Nafshi Geula. That I ask Hashem not just for the Geula, the global Geula, the Geula that applies to the entire Klal Yisrael, but to bring the Geula for my personal nefesh. That I, as an individual, should have my Geula, should be able to experience my Simcha, to have my sadness eliminated, my unhappiness, and to have it turned around to real, genuine joy, happiness, Simcha, which we said is synonymous with kiddusha, with holiness, with success, every type of success in Yiddishkeit. And this is why when the Torah describes Moshiach's coming, when the Torah describes, you know, the ultimate, the great success of Klal Yisrael in the future, the pasuk says, "V'omar b'yoyim hahu," that Jews will say on that day, they're going to see Hashem, and they're going to point to Him, and they're going to say, "Zeh Hashem." This is the Hashem kivinu loy. This is what we were waiting for. What were we waiting for? Nogila v'nismacha b'yishuaso. We were waiting to rejoice and enjoy the salvation of Hashem. We were waiting for real, solid, wall-to-wall, 100% simcha. That's what we were waiting for. That's the definition of geula. That's the definition of Yeshua, when a person is zochah to nogila v'nismacha, to real, solid joy. And Rav Nosson Zal says, let's go back to the beginning. Let's trace, if we trace something from the beginning, we'll be able to see how things started, and therefore how they're supposed to end, and everything in the middle. We know that the Torah begins with Hashem creating Adam and Chava, and Hashem gives them one instruction. They're allowed to eat from everything except one particular tree, the Eitz Hadas. Unfortunately, there's a snake, there's a nochosh, which is a satan, which is a seductive force that convinces Chava and Adam HaRishon to go ahead and eat from this tree. And then Hashem speaks to Adam HaRishon and asks him, Hamin ho'eitz, did you eat from that tree that I told you not to? And the Gemara says in Chulin, that those, when Hashem said that word, Hamin Ho'ez, the word Hamin is spelled Hey Men Nun, exactly the same as the word Hamon. One of the worst enemies of the Jewish people, who almost succeeded in wiping out completely, destroying the Jews, destroying any chance of a Beis Hamikdash, a holy temple, destroying everything, was Haman, this Russia called Haman, who comes from the nation of Amalek, who is defined as total evil, 100% evil. There's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Rak ra kol hayoyim, all bad all day. And the Mefarshim tell us that the last letters of those four words, Rak, a Kuf, Ra, an Ayin, Kol, a Lamed, Hayoy, Mem, spell the word Amalek. Amalek represents the one worst nation of the world, of all the 70 nations of the world, that's a composite of all the evil of all 70 nations put together. Rav Nosson Zal says, that the Gemara says, that we see that from this act of eating from this tree, this is what initiated, this is what gave birth to an Amalek, which eventually led to a Haman. Hamin Hoetz, Haman Menatora Minayim, and this Hamin Hoetz. Hashem says, right after they did this, what was the result? The result was, Be'itzavim Toichalena. The penalty, the punishment for this was depression, sadness. It starts with Be'itzavim Toichalena, and phase one finishes with Hashem erasing the whole world, destroying everything. First time in history, first and last time in history, that Hashem made a mabul and wiped out almost everything. What was the lighter fluid? Vayis'atzev elibo. The pasuk says at the end of Parshas Bereishis, Hashem, kaviyochel, became depressed. Hashem was unhappy, sad, and Hashem, and that led to total destruction, wiping out everything. This obviously shows us that the rectification, the tikkun for the Eitz Hadas, the tikkun, the ability to destroy Amalek, to destroy Haman, to reverse all of this, has to be one thing, simcha. And this is why the holiday that commemorates the story of Haman, the whole incident of Haman, this Russia, who dates back to the Eitz Hadas, whose origins are from this Vayis'atzev Elibay, Purim is considered to be the holiest holiday that Klal Yisrael has in many ways. The Tikkun Ezra says that Yom Kippur, which most Jews consider to be the holiest day of the year, Yom Echad Lashana, the Tikkun Ezra says Yom Kippur is called Yom Kippurim. It's a day that's like Purim. It's similar. It's not as great as Purim. It's not as holy. It's not as good for Klal Yisrael, but it comes pretty close. Yom Kippur comes pretty close to Purim. What is Purim? Purim is wall-to-wall simcha. Purim is all kinds of variety, and we'll go into detail and touching on the different aspects of it. Of the different aspects of simcha that a person experiences on Purim, and especially the point that we mentioned in the beginning, the fact that Rabbeinu Zal had said that in order for a person to succeed in being happy constantly and consistently, a person must resort to mili d'shtusa, to fun, to things that people would consider silly, as long as it's not harming another person, as long as it's not committing an actual sin. We're talking about mili d'shtusa, shchoik, that kind of item. We know that on Purim, the Shulchan Aruch speaks about a person drinking to excess one day of the year. We know that on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, at a wedding, there is a mitzvah to partake in wine, the kiddush that we make on wine, drinking a little bit of wine, of things to add joy, add simcha. But on Purim especially, more so than any other day of the year, chayev imish lebesuni bepurim. A person is obligated to be extra happy, and a happiness that's not necessarily an intellectual kind of happiness, but rather ad lo yada. The Torah says clearly ad lo yada. We're not talking about deep thought. And in fact, there are mefarshim that say that this can be observed by a person going to sleep. This is a case of a person putting aside their intellectualism, putting aside their great chachmas, but sticking to pshitus, simple, sincere fun, happiness, joy. This is this Yom Tov of Purim, which is the in many respects, the highest of all the holidays. We'll hold it here for now. there's a lot more on this particular topic about Purim and this aspect of it, this simcha, having to come on to Mili Vishnusa, which Mitzvah Hashem we're going to continue in the next shiur. If there's any questions or comments, we have.
In the Chabad Sforim, when they talk about Kesef, they mention two levels of Kesef: Tanug, Ratzon, and Emunah.
Tanug, Ratzon, and
Emunah.
Emunah.
And you said Kesef is a level of Simcha. So how would you say that? Oneg, or would you say that the difference? Why is it different?
All three.
All three.
You touched on three things, which we're going to be covering all three topics.
So where does Simcha come into Kesef? Joins into Oineg, is that where you...
My answer is that Simcha is a term that includes Oineg. Oineg, pleasure. Pleasure is a form of Simcha. Emuna is an aspect of Simcha. There is, we're gonna see, that there is no such thing as real Simcha without Emuna. If you get a person, again, who drinks, a person who goes into a bar and downs a bottle of... Johnny Walker or something, and gets drunk. That's not Simcha. Anybody knows that that's not Simcha. Look at him 15 minutes later, or an hour and a half later, you're going to see he's a very unhappy person, to say the least. Whereas a Jew taking that same bottle, and doing it on Purim, and doing it because they believe in Hashem, because Hashem said to do, because this is a mitzvah, this is an act of serving Hashem, this is something that there's Olam Haba for, this is something that will lead to an eternal place. Different. So that's the Emunah. And the third item, like you said, was Ratzon, desire, this issue of desire, which is also synonymous with Simcha, as we're going to see. It's only when a person, when we talk about Ratzon, whether it be between friends, a rotzayn toy, a feeling of goodwill from one person to the other, when we talk about a rotzayn between a husband and wife, a feeling of goodwill between them in the relationship, or rotzayn towards Hashem, it's only when there's simcha. It's only when a person's in a happy frame of mind that there's goodwill. Is it?
So when you said earlier that Rabbi Nachman says that the person has to have simcha and shtus, there is a certain borders to it. It can't just be like general kumavah. There has to be some kind of borders to it.
Exactly. We said not doing it in a manner that committing a sin,
right,
actually, quote, or harming another person. Okay. Those are examples of some of the borders.
Well, it's simcha sutra is the shem.
Yes.
Is that right? Because the simcha would be that there's such a mula and a shem, but a shem is available there.
Exactly. That's one aspect of it. No, there's one aspect, but that's the exact terminology that's used by not just by Rav Zal, but by all the Sforim, the Zohar, all Sforim, that a synonym for Hashem, for Shem, is Simcha. That's one of the names, that's one of the descriptions of Hashem. The Gemara in Shabbos says that the Shekhinah will not be found unless it will not be in the presence of a person, unless that person is in a state of simcha. Mm-hmm. And this is what we said before about edak mechatosi, and the whole concept of mitzvah is a concept of simcha. The ikur of a mitzvah is the joy of mitzvah.
Are there other things aside from Mili Vishnusa that are powerful in maintaining it?
Of course. We touched on one of them. We touched on mitzvah. We mentioned Aveira versus mitzvah, that Aveira is atzvus, mitzvah is simcha. And we're going to touch, he brought up the topic of emuna. Emuna is synonymous with simcha, and we're going to have a lot to say about that. That true emuna manifests itself. A person who really believes in Hashem is a person who's happy. If a person is happy, it shows that there's something, there's a certain weakness in their faith. Because if a person believed that the wealthiest billionaire in the world was standing right next to them with his hand around their shoulder saying, what can I do for you now? Which normal, rational person wouldn't be extremely happy? And we're talking about Emunah in Hashem means not a billionaire. We're talking about a being that has every, money is just one of all infinite solutions to all problems, to anything that, any lack at all. Muna means, you know, awareness that I'm in the presence of Hashem 24 hours a day, and that Hashem is Toiv Hashem Lakol, Hashem is good for everybody, especially me, including me. You know, we're gonna have, I'm saying he touched on something that I hope is gonna be a major, major topic in this discussion.
Is Simcha related to Muna, or is it more a person's nature to just to back into the details that express somehow? Some people just oblivious, and they always have, they're oblivious to their problems. They don't necessarily have more Muna, it's just their nature.
The answer is, this is what I mentioned before, that if we would, let's say, see a person going to a bar, you know, down, and see him, like, he's lit up, like, you know, he looks as happy as could be, but then we see 15 minutes later or an hour later, he isn't happy. We know that what appeared to us to be like happiness was really empty. It was an empty kind of happiness. It was a happiness without meaning. Here also, there's no question about it that there are people who are naturally more, you know, happy-minded, even with less, even if they have less than somebody else, and they don't, some of them don't even believe in Hashem. You know, people who don't believe at all, non-religious, you know, and non-believers. And the person happens to be a happy kind of person, and there are other people who are religious, etc., you know, believe in Hashem, and yet we see the opposite, unhappiness, depression. If we look through the eyes of the breathless Svarim, if we look through Rabbeinu Zal's eyes, we're going to see that the person who's happy without Emuna, it's empty. It's empty. That's not, that doesn't, it's not within the word Simcha. The word Simcha is synonymous with Kiddusha. It's synonymous with Shechina. It's something that really makes sense. A guy who's just happy for nothing, could be classified as a nut, you know, also. You know, whereas a Jew who has almost nothing, you take a look at a Jew who doesn't have money for his mortgage, his rent, is this, he's got every bill, he's got 12 sicknesses, he's got 100 things surrounding him that are minuses, that most people would define as minuses. But he's got one thing on the other side of the scale, Hashem. It was his belief in Hashem, his awareness, his consciousness of Hashem, and that outweighs and outshines in his mind, in his heart, that makes all of his problems seem like nothing. You know, a person says, I have a list of things that are bothering me right now. The list is 1,200 items. That's on one column. And then I have a list of all the positive things in my life. And the only thing I can possibly come up with is, Hashem, I'm in good shape. I'm okay. You know, the concept of certain people, we know that one of the major things that caused depression, unhappiness to people is money, lack of money. And most people, the vast majority of people in the world today, could mention a number, a particular number. To one person, it's $500,000. To another person, it's $15 million. Where if he had that in the bank, he would say, I could be happy. You know, if you ask me, can I be happy all the time? Can I be happy all day? Can I be happy 6 days or 7 days? Yes. If I had $15 million in the bank, I think I'd be with nothing. My wife burnt the soup, it wouldn't, but, you know, nothing would get me upset. And another person says, that's nonsense. Because the person feels that's his security. Because unless they're basing their security, they're defining their security, feeling of security by money, by a certain amount of money. And if I don't have that, I'm insecure. If I'm insecure, what could be worse than that? And to another person, I have Hashem in the bank. And that's worth more to me. I have more confidence and trust in the goodness of Hashem, in what Hashem has done for me till today, and my confidence that Hashem is taking care of me and going to take care of me. I believe in that more than I believe in the Federal Reserve. I believe in that more than I believe in the dollar. Because again, I have examples. I know there were Jews in Germany and in other, who had money in the bank, and didn't make it. You know, it didn't. That wasn't security. That didn't guarantee security. So that can't be the real guarantee of security. The real guarantee of security is emunah, emunah Hashem. But there definitely are people who match more Hashem. But the Rabbeinu Zal teaches us to have every person, no exceptions, can learn what it takes, the true definition, the meaning of what simcha is, and have the advice as to how to get to it, you know, in all circumstances.